This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
I missed talking to Chip Patterson yesterday. What'd you guys talk about, Dennis?
I wasn't here yesterday.
Oh, you weren't here yesterday either?
No.
So you and I were both out?
Yeah.
Did Hayes do it all? Did Hayes Permar host and produce?
What
did
he do? Hey, well, John Rand also stepped
in. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was gone yesterday.
What did you do yesterday?
It was my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thanks.
I didn't know. I honestly didn't know it was your birthday.
That's fine.
Gosh, now I'm embarrassed.
That's okay.
Should I have known? What was I?
I mean,
maybe. I care.
Do you?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
And apparently not enough to know it was your birthday yesterday, but happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
You know what? Here's what I don't know. I don't know how old you are. Don't tell me. You have an old music soul.
Okay.
But you're obviously not that old.
All right.
I will say that...
I have a weird taste when it comes to music. A very eclectic blend.
Absolutely. I will say that you are 32.
Really?
That's my guess.
Okay. 36.
Are you? Look at you.
Yep.
Look at you. Good for you. You look good for 36.
Well, thank you. Not good, though, just for 36.
Right. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
It's okay. Good for you. All right. Let's listen to the Wall of Sound.
The Wall of Sound is a function of this studio. There's no doubt about it.
We should play the birthday game every day. No, we shouldn't.
Like how old someone is?
Like there are birthdays every day.
True.
So whose birthday did I see that it was? Is it Brooks Koepka's birthday? I think because Liv wished him a happy birthday on Twitter. So happy birthday, Brooks Koepka. As a birthday present, here's, I don't know, $100 million?
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever they paid him to jump, which is whatever. All right, let's get to the Wall of Sound. And we will start with the NBA draft tonight. Jay Williams, ESPN. Why is fellow Duke Blue Devil, not alum, but product, Paolo Banchero, the favorite to be number one?
If you understand a little bit of the situation in Orlando, right? Jeff Wettman is the general Magic president of basketball operations. And for him, the reason why Paolo's probably the odds-on favorite is because they posted workout video of Chet Holmgren and Jabari Smith when they came in, but they were a little bit more secretive about Paolo Banchero. Almost in a way, they refused to tell the media if they worked him out or not, right? So when you start thinking about that narrative floating around the Orlando Magic, and I will say Jabari has the talent, and we'll get into NBA comps, like a mesh of a number of players to me. The talent is so there. It jumps off the page. There's like a Rashad Lewis-type ceiling for him when it's all said and done. But Paolo Banchero can create his own shot.
There's nothing that Paolo Banchero can't do. We talked about this before, and we talked about it with Brian Geisinger. To me, the only question mark I have about Banchero is he have elite enough quickness to become the problem for the other team? Like, if you put a bigger man on him, he blows by. If you put a smaller man on him, he shoots over, right? He just powers through. And I just recall too much of Leaky Black being able to guard him and then Brady Manek being able to guard him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just my feeling, my only trepidation. In terms of the skill and the brain, I think he's the best prospect. I just don't know. Will the quickness get there? If it does, then he's the best player. He's just the best player if the quickness gets there. All right, back to the NBA draft. Jordan Cornett. Jordan Cornett on, although he likes Chet Holmgren, the center, I guess, from Gonzaga, he realizes that there is no clear-cut number one.
I think that's what makes it so exciting, is that there's not a dead set number one. And as I look at, honestly, everyone says the draft gets interesting at four and there's a drop off. I see Keegan Murray at the fifth spot and think these are five guys that can change a franchise. So I think that there's, in a lot of ways, they're alluring in different ways, but they're hybrid guys. They're versatile pieces. They're gifted, unique set of skills that can be puzzle pieces and malleable to different franchises in those first five that need it. Chet Holmgren's at the top of that list. I think the biggest question mark with him is durability. We've seen body types like that. There's not a ton of muscle. His back is kind of concaved a little bit. You don't necessarily love the posture. Can that hold up? The toughness is in question because of his body. But, you know, one of the things about the draft that it always is a misnomer to me, Amber and Courtney, is people always focus on what people can't do.
Well, that's what we do in the draft. Right?
Yeah.
That's what we do in the draft.
Like, well, he's not Look, good this. He can't do that. Yeah.
We're always trying to find perfect, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what did I just say about Banchero? My fear is this. We know all of this. My fear is this. With Jabari Smith, my fear would be the rest of his game. He's a great shooter, quick twitch athlete, probably the best athlete of the three. But doesn't necessarily have the ball skills in the overall game. That doesn't mean he won't be the first pick. I think he's the favorite to be the first pick. Last I looked, Jabari Smith was the favorite to be the first pick. And all the mock drafts that I have seen have Jabari Smith going one. But that's what we do. We always try to find...
He's the betting favorite.
Yeah, Jabari Smith is.
Yes.
Yeah, we always try to find what somebody can't do. Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We're talking retirement and coach. I'm a simple guy, but I like colors. Tell me how I can color code money and get ready for retirement.
I like colors too. I like pictures. Colors. I like graphs. I don't like just a bunch of words. And so what we try to do is we try to break down all those words on your statement, all those numbers into three colors, red, green, yellow. People are amazed when they come in, and most of their money is in the red category.
Yeah, I don't want that.
Now, red means high horsepower potential. It also means high loss potential. So you have to, it's a give and take. They want to do that or that. Yellow means liquid money. You can get it any time. It's not going to earn anything. Green gives you safe growth, but also gives you lifetime income. As we get closer to retirement, we need some green accounts. We need the green zone, we call it. In Baghdad, green zone was important. Green zone's important for you, too. The next 10 people, Adam, it's a $1,000 value. Golden ticket we're going to put together for you, your very own total plan that has a green zone.
It's a traffic light. I hope it's green for you. 800-661-7383 or text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter. All right. What the NFL can't do, according to Harry Douglas of ESPN, is figure out a way to hold Dan Snyder, the owner of the Washington Commandos, accountable. And one of the big problems is that Snyder doesn't really care, according to Harry Douglas.
A guy who was invited to come tell his side of things, but instead he's on his super yacht in France. It shows you how much he cares about women and what he really thinks about women. Because if I have an opportunity to clear my name and go tell my side of the story, I'm not going to be somewhere where everybody else can make that assumption for me. I'm going to be right there to tell my side of the story. So it just lets you know it's not that important to him. But when you look at ownership, and it's not every owner in the NFL, but do majority owners condone this behavior in the workplace? Or does Daniel Snyder know X, Y, and Z about a few other owners so they don't want to say a damn word so their stuff don't come out? Because how can you just sit there, especially ones that have daughters and have families, and you know what's right and what's wrong, and you don't do anything about it? Like, how can you sit there and just let a single human being do these type of things?
All right, first of all, Harry Douglas, yes, other owners condone this because, like, this is not just about the NFL.
Yeah.
I mean, it's major corporations. Every single NFL team is a major corporation, right? And corporations have a problem in the workplace, by and large, with women. Because at the highest levels, many of these corporations are dominated by men. And I'm not saying that every guy who works for these companies is guilty of this, but it's not uncommon. The reason why other owners haven't called out Dan Snyder and haven't pushed for the NFL to get rid of Dan Snyder, even if they don't like him, and I think by and large he is unliked, is that They understand that there are skeletons in their closets. I said this earlier. If Daniel Snyder were as honorable as Jerry Richardson, I understand how crazy that sounds. And I am in no way saying that Richardson is honorable. Okay? I am just drawing the comparison between Jerry Richardson, who had Jeans Friday, and Daniel Snyder. If Snyder were as honorable as Richardson, he would recognize that the best thing that Daniel Snyder could do, not only for the Washington Commandos, which has not been successful with him as an owner, even though his whole life has been centered around doing, like, owning this football team, but he would also be doing the NFL a benefit, because the NFL will be better with somebody else owning the Commandos as a better franchise. Right now, a heritage franchise is a drag on the league. Washington's one of these spots. Unfortunately, they've stunk for the most part under Dan Snyder. Ownership matters. Ownership really... You know who's not that great a franchise in the NFL? The New England Patriots.
Yeah.
But you know who wins a lot because they have great ownership? The New England Patriots.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they matter to the league. But honestly, they ain't that great a franchise. They have just become one because they have been run properly. Even though, you know, obviously Robert Kraft has had his own issues, but it doesn't seem like those issues manifest itself in the organization, right? Daniel Snyder's have. All right, we got to jump out of here. When we come back, John Forslund, should there have been a too many men call? Does it really matter? We'll talk about Stanley Cup Finals Game 4 and what could be the ender tomorrow. Next.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19th, 2006. But it all started May 6th, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th anniversary wherever you get your podcasts. We hear Springsteen. Must be time to talk to the voice of hockey, John Forslund, the voice of the Seattle Kraken. We a big fan of Bruce Springsteen. That was the most awkward open ever. John, how are you?
Never awkward with you. How are you, Adam?
I'm doing great. What's your favorite Springsteen song?
Jungle Land.
Okay. So is your favorite album also Born to Run?
Yes, it is.
Okay. I'm not judging. Mine is Wild, Innocent, and East Street Shuffle. So that I go way back, but still Jungle.
That's a way back machine, but that's great stuff. Yeah.
All right, let's get to last night. I don't want to start, but I'm going to with the game winning goal, because I think Colorado was simply the better team last night, and I think we got the just winner. But what's your view of too many men? Because I think it impacted the play, because I think Kadri was the player who was coming on for McKinnon, who was coming off slowly.
Yeah, well, you're right, and it did impact the game, but I think, you know, this is a slippery slope that, you know, you would go down if the league decides to enforce this tighter. You know, this is a play you see all the time. There's a long change in overtime, as we have in the second period. It's a lazy change by McKinnon. He's taking his time to get to the bench. You see that a lot. You know, in the rule book, there you have the 5-foot rule, that area that's safe before you get to the bench, rarely enforced. I mean, if they enforce that, you would have that happen over and over and over again, and it would bog down the game. So I think the referees basically had to put their whistles away long before that. I don't think that type of play would have been called. Should it be reviewed moving forward? I don't think so. It can't be reviewed now under the rules, as we know. And then there's clips to show that Tampa had 7 skaters on the ice when they scored the first goal, right? So, I mean, it's the fluidness of the game. And, you know, that's where you get into a tough thing about hockey, because it's a really tough game to officiate, because by the book, and maybe all the sports are like this to a degree, but I think because of the randomness of hockey, you probably see it more than you do in other sports. But the officials have to have a feel for what's happening on the ice so that the players can determine the outcome, which they did. But again, MacKinnon made no, you know, he was just lazily going off the ice. He wasn't involved in the play. It's just unfortunate that because of the long change, Sergachev was out there for almost 90 plus seconds.
Yep.
Right. And he gets turned on the goal. It was a beautiful move, and everybody missed it, but it went in.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I mentioned this when I first started talking about this earlier in the show. I mentioned the fact that we need to start with the fact that Kadri, playing his first game in, 4 weeks almost, that was an incredibly athletic, highly skilled move to bring it back to his forehand to get off the shot. And he had to go through two players. Sergachev was clearly gassed. If he plays the body, it's probably not a goal, but he played the puck because we all get, I guess, kind of get mesmerized. But it really was a super athletic play. Now, I get back to what I alluded to in the beginning, and something you said when we spoke about a week ago, was that you finally went back to the fact that Colorado was just better to pick the Avalanche. I leaned on Vasilevsky over Darcy Kemper. Kemper played very well last night. I think he let in the softest of all the goals that were scored, but he still played very well in spite of that. But Colorado just looks like the better team, and now they've got Kadri back. And I mean, it's almost hard to imagine this game getting back to game six.
Right. And you know that Braden Point's probably long gone, and Cirelli was injured in the game last night, and Chernak was injured in the game last night for Tampa Bay. So the longer, you know, that stuff continues, and even if they do play, you know, what level do they come back at? Kadri's a great story. I mean, he couldn't take faceoffs, but he certainly could make a move and shoot the puck. It was a great shot. And, you know, that just shows that these players have an unbelievable amount of determination when it comes to getting back in a lineup under playoff circumstances. And the thing about Kemper, and I think we talked about this the last time, he just has to be close to Vasilevsky.
Yeah.
He can't be the reason they lose, or the reason they're behind in games, or the reason they lose confidence in the locker room. He just has to be where he was last night, which is very close to Vasilevsky's level. Not many can reach that level, but you know, he survived that first period after getting scored on early and losing his mask. And I believe they had 17 shots on him
yes.
in the first period. And so he got through probably a mental battle as much as anything else. And now it's, hey, it's a freight train now. I say there's absolutely no chance Tampa wins game five, but that's why they play.
Yeah, but look, and Tampa is good. It's clear that Braden Point, he came back, tried to go. He really didn't give him much, and we're probably not going to see Braden Point. But Kucherov's also banged up. He got banged up at right. the end of game three. I thought game three was chippy and borderline dirty and dirty enough. I don't think we saw that yesterday, but I think we saw a lot of chippy borderline stuff in game three. We can call it playoff hockey. I think it went a little bit beyond that.
Yeah, it did. It crossed the line many areas, especially near the end of the game. Mm-hmm. And the series hasn't had a lot of angst attached to it. I think there's been way too much attention, and rightfully so, from Tampa Bay's perspective, where they have to figure out their structure and how they want to play against that juggernaut, against that high-octane offensive attack and the speed of the Avalanche from the back end, the forwards, everybody can move. And I think it took them a couple of games and to really get humiliated in the second game to figure out, come home, get a matchup that they want, and then play a game where you basically flip the puck out of the zone and get defensive position, try and slow them down. So because of that, I don't think we've had a lot of pushing and shoving back and forth. That makes it, for me, I enjoy that. I think it makes the series, you know, a lot of fun as it moves forward, a lot more storylines. But this one here it's interesting. It starts great guns for Colorado. They get back to Tampa. They start to write a little bit of a story, but it's not enough, and it usually means the better team is about to win.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it looks to me. And again, I mean, I could recognize that the 18 skaters that Colorado puts out there are just better. It's as...
Right.
as good a skating blue line as I can recall in the NHL. I mean, because, you know, as great as Cale Makar is, and I'm not taking anything away, Devin Toews, playing next to him a lot, is an elite skater. And they don't even have Samuel Girard, who is also a great skater, albeit a little bit more diminutive. They have just created a great mix, and they can all really skate on the blue line. They can skate enough to kind of hide the fact that Jack Johnson's still back there.
Yeah. There's no question about that. But and most of the season, Curtis McDermott, who's not in their lineup, most of the season he was playing defense, and he's really a swing guy, tough guy. He's not a very good defenseman. Matter of fact, the Kraken drafted him in the expansion draft. The next day, traded him to Colorado. But he's a role player. He has toughness, and he can play some forward too. But so they basically played with five defensemen all year. And three or four of the most mobile defensemen you'll find, and one guy that's completely off the charts in Makar. So a lot of teams chase that. A lot of teams will. It's hard to find that number of personnel that can play the game like that from that position. But that's today's game. That's what everybody looks for, those guys who can defend but can also push the game, possess the puck, and that's what today's game is all about.
At one point, John Forslund, Colorado was 6-for-12 on the power play in this series.
Yeah.
I mean, as great as Vasilevsky is, as great as Tampa is, especially on the back end, although Hedman was in the box for one of those penalties with McDonough and Sergachev and Chernak, and the way that they can skate and defend. I mean, it's really hard to fathom that anybody could be 6-for-12. Is this hot, or is this... When you get to this point, there's just an extra intensity that cranks up, and you probably should be about that if you've got the skill level of Colorado.
Well, if you have that, you're right. If you have that skill level, that's where you should be. If you're clicking and you understand instinctively where everybody is supposed to be, and you make these passes that are just zinged across the ice. I mean, they're cross-seaming back and forth before Tampa Bay even realizes where the puck is. And it's only because of the quick hands of McKinnon. Yes, you know, he can be like Ovechkin on that weak side or Stamkos and have that mighty one-timer, but those two players don't have the quick hands that McKinnon has and the stopping and starting and the maneuverability he has on his skates. It's absolutely incredible. And on the other flank, you have Rantanen, who's as good a passer as Kucherov, if not better. I mean, Rantanen's one of the best passers in the National Hockey League. Doesn't get enough credit for that. At the top of it, you have Makar, who can distribute and defer both ways with lightning hands too, and blocks the line better than anybody and can find the shooting angle and the shooting lane to get through. And then you have Landeskog in front of the goal, who is great at it, and he's also a great goal line guy. So, yeah, they have elite personnel. And so because of that right now, with all that confidence, it's impossible to stop.
Is the key, though, for Colorado, as great as their top line guys are? Now, Kadri's back. We've only seen one game of Kadri, but he'd be part of this anyway. Kadri, Nikushkin, Lekkonen, who has been great since coming over from Montreal. Isn't that sort of the difference between these two teams in terms of the skaters, to me, was that Colorado was getting great performances out of second, third line guys, and for Tampa, it had basically been just the top guys carrying them.
Yes, and the thing about the Avalanche over the last 3 years is they've arguably had the best line in the game with McKinnon, Landeskog, and Rantanen, right? Yeah. And what they've been able to do is say, well, we've got a great thing going here, much like Boston and other teams that have an elite top line to the point where they, you know, put a name on it, right? That type of line that's together for a long time. It's hard to break them up. But what Colorado and their management figured out is they have to break them up. You have to figure out a way. Now, some of it has to do with injury, but by and large, they were able to stockpile at the deadline, get a swing guy like Lekkonen, who's an unbelievable player. We talked about him the last time I was with you. He's just amazing. He can play with anybody, all four lines, and perform a role no matter whatever role you give him. He performs it at a very, very high level. clutch player as indicative by his two overtime winners and a great pass to Kadri last night. So, you know, you look at all these different things, they have balance now. They can move the three big guys around and they're stronger because of it. And during the regular season, Kadri had a MVP type season.
Yeah.
So, and he's about to get paid by somebody. So, I mean, this is one of the great teams, and they'll mark time. They still have a game to play. They still have to win it. I understand all that, but I'm really convinced they will. And then we'll see how far they can take it, because they're kind of poised for it. At some point, they're going to have to pay Nathan MacKinnon.
Mm-hmm.
He's the best bargain, along with Jacob Slavin, anybody in the game right now. But that's the way it is.
Yeah, MacKinnon agreed to his long deal before he became this version of Nathan MacKinnon. He was always just kind of a vision of what could be. Now he is, and he is just an incredible player to watch. But they've got a lot of him. John Forslund, I appreciate your time. I don't feel like we're going to have any more games after Friday. But we'll have to figure out a way to talk anyway.
Oh, we'll figure something out, right? We have to.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Enjoy enjoy vacation.
Adam. Yes, I will. Have a great weekend.
You
take
too.
Care.
John Forslund. On Twitter at John Forslund, if you want to just hit him up and tell him hockey things.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19th, 2006, but it all started May 6th, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.